Jonah's on the run from God, and that's never a good idea. You're all about it as you join us for the Balanced Word.
Wake up, my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up, my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up, my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Great to have you with us for the Balanced Word as we continue through the Bible, picking out key Bible stories as we go. Today we're going to take you to the Old Testament book of Jonah. It's a book that's famous for a rather dicey experience Jonah had with a big fish. But there's a lot more to the book of Jonah than that. God gave Jonah a direct order, and we'll see this reluctant prophet try to run from God. We've all heard fish stories about the one that got away, but when Jonah tried to get away from God, he was in for a real adventure. Here's Pastor Dave Rolfe.
If you have a Bible, turn over to the book of Jonah. It's a short little four-chapter book in the Old Testament, the book of Jonah. When you're talking about Bible stories, it really doesn't get any better than Jonah, the guy that was swallowed by the whale, long before Geppetto and Pinocchio were. And most of us growing up heard that story, being gobbled up by the whale and being spit out and all that. It's a great story. It's an interesting book. It's classified as one of the minor prophets, but it's not really a book of prophecy at all. It's a narrative. It's a story about something that happened to a guy. It also doesn't have a big emphasis toward Israel, which makes it unique, along with Obadiah. And later, Nahum is the same way. But it's addressing something that happened relative to a city called Nineveh. Nineveh was the capital city of the Assyrian Empire. For most of us, we remember the Assyrian Empire because the Assyrians were the one who conquered the northern tribes of Israel. The 10 northern tribes were taken into captivity by the Assyrians. Well, the book of Jonah is pre-exilic. That is, this is before, it's in the early 8th century BC. This was before the children of Israel were captured by the Assyrians. But the Assyrians had one of they had a mighty army, brutal army, really. They were a threat to Israel at this point. Later, they would end up taking them over, 100 years or so later. But they were the capital city of the greatest empire in the world at that time. Later, the Assyrians would be, the city of Nineveh ended up being captured, overtaken by a Median king, and then the Assyrian Empire ended up being swallowed up by the Babylonian Empire, and the Babylonians were the ones who took Judah, the southern kingdom, captive later than that in the 6th century. But at this point, this is like the great city that was a threat. It was a city that they measured cities based on how long it would take you to walk around it. And in this book of Jonah, it says that it was a city of 3 days. So it would take you 3 days to walk around it. That's a pretty good sized city. Estimates at that time, the population of Nineveh varied, but estimates between 600,000 and over 1 million people, some people said even close to 2 million people, lived in this city that God calls the great city of Nineveh. So we pick up our story here in chapter 1 and verse 1. It says, "The word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, 'Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, the biggest city in the world, and cry out against it, for their wickedness has come up before me.'" So there's this prophet Jonah who we really know nothing else about. And God comes to him and says, "I've noticed how cruel and evil the Assyrians are. The city of Nineveh is the heart of that. It's time for somebody to go preach to them." Now, that's the Assyrians. If you read your history, they were incredibly cruel people, awful, human sacrifices. When they would capture somebody, they would take the rulers and put hooks in their jaws and pull them by chains hooked to hooks in their jaws. They were awful people. They would skin people alive and things like that. So God says, "I've noticed, man, those people are disgusting. So I want you to go preach to them." Now, that's kind of, you can see why it would strike Jonah as a little weird. They're so gross that you want me to preach to them? Why in the world do you want somebody to preach to people like that? And that was his attitude exactly. Verse 3 of chapter 1. But Jonah arose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. What prophet of God thinks that he can get in a boat and get away from the presence of the Lord? What seminary did this guy go to that's his theology? It's kind of weird. But he's heading, now where Nineveh was, it was up in present day Iraq. So if you're thinking on your map, you have Israel that's at the right side or the east side of the Mediterranean Sea. Now you go north of Israel, again to present day Iraq, and over to the east of Israel, and that's where Nineveh would be, and that's where the Assyrian Empire was headquartered. So instead of heading north by land and east, he goes the opposite direction. He goes down to Joppa, which if you go with us to Israel in March, you'll see the city of Joppa. It's today Haifa is right next to there, and it's their biggest port on that side of the Mediterranean Sea. There was another big port up where present-day Lebanon is, but even today, most of the shipping comes through Haifa. And so he goes there, gets on a ship heading for Tarshish. Now, there are several different Tarshishes. I guess it was a popular name for cities, but probably it's referring to one that's all the way across the Mediterranean to present-day Spain. So he just wants to get on a boat and go as far away from God as he can. Because he figures God is in Israel. He wants me to go to Iraq. I'm heading to Spain. I'm going to go watch me some bullfights. And so, you know, this is what he does. At this point, it doesn't really explain why he wants to get out of the presence of the Lord, other than just, I don't want to go to Nineveh. Now, later in the story, we find out his reason for why he didn't want to go to Nineveh, but we'll come to that. But a prophet who leaves the presence of God. Now he gets on the ship as the story continues there in chapter 1. He gets on the ship and God sent a storm. Storms on the Mediterranean can just be crazy, and especially with those old wooden boats that they had in those days. And so the ship's being tossed around. The people are getting desperate. They're tossing off cargo, trying to lighten the ship. And it said that everybody on the boat was told, pray to your gods. They figure, hey, with a crew like ours, a bunch of people were, you know, traveling around the world, there must be some religions that are practiced here. So we need all the help that we can get. So if you know of a god or goddess or whoever, pray to them. And so they're looking around on the boat for more things to throw away. And meantime, Jonah is sleeping in his little cabin down in the bottom of the boat. So they woke him up and they go, do you have a god? You need to pray to your god. And he said, yeah, I have a god. I actually am a prophet. I work for God. And, you know, and it's the God who made all of this. He made the sea and the land and everything. They're like, you're kidding. You worship a really big God? Man, you need to pray to us. And so then time went on and they're like, we got to see whose fault this is. So they got everyone in one room and they did what they call casting lots. It was kind of a dice game that they would use just to try to find an answer to something. God's people used it often. Pagans used it as well. It was just a weird way of trying to figure out what to do. And so when they cast lots, the lot fell on Jonah. It's like, okay, it's his fault. So they go, what's your story? He goes, well, I work for God, the real God, the God that's causing this storm, and he's doing this because of me. He told me to go one way, and I went the other way. I got on this ship because I wanted to hide from God. Apparently, it didn't work. And they're like, you idiot. I mean, you work for God? Why in the world would you want to run away from a God that has this kind of power? And secondly, now what are you going to do to fix it? And he, even at this point, He wasn't ready to say, God, I'm sorry, will you just please calm the storm? And first chance I get, I'll head to Nineveh. Instead, he goes, just toss me overboard. And I'm sure you guys will be fine. This is all on me. And they're like, no, we don't want to do that. We don't want to kill you. You seem like you're nuts. But, you know, then it got worse. And so finally they're like, well, at least it's 180 pounds of weight. And so they chucked him over the side of the boat. And boom, instantly, the sea is totally calm. And they're like, whoa, that guy's God is something. And so he goes in the water. He's figuring he's going to die. But it says that God had prepared a great fish. Now, we usually say a whale. And in the New Testament, the word that's used to refer to it is the word for whale. So great fish, whale, whatever, either would be possible if God prepared it. So there are people who have been swallowed by whales and survived. So there's no reason to believe it wasn't a whale. But anyway, he gets gobbled up by a whale. At this point, I think when I'm thrashing around in the water, and here comes this whale's mouth, I might pray. Don't you think you would? Even when I'm on the deck of the boat and they're about to throw me off, I might go, God? But Jonah's amazing. You see at the end of chapter 1. He was in there for 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the whale before he prayed. This guy is stubborn. He really has a thing about Nineveh and God. He really doesn't want to do what God wants him to do. But, and you know, you got to understand, if you're in a whale stomach for 3 days, all of the acid in there, the digestive fluids, would burn your clothes off, would burn your skin, would take all the color out of your skin. You'd be stark white. Your hair would be burned off your body. You'd be choking on seaweed and disgusting kind of smells and everything. And it would be, I mean, you remember in Jaws when they just cut that shark open and it was like, oh, they were heaving and everything. Well, he's in there for 3 days and he's not praying yet. But finally, as we get to chapter 2, it says, after 3 days and 3 nights, verse 1, then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the fish's belly. And he said, I cried out to the Lord because of my affliction, and he's answering me. Out of the belly of Sheol, or the grave, or hell, I cried, and you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the floods surrounded me. Your billows and waves passed over me. He goes on to say, you know, the deep closed around me. In verse 5, weeds were wrapped around my head. It was so gross. It was disgusting. And then in verse 7, when my soul fainted within me, I remembered, oh yeah, the Lord, huh? Wonder whatever happened to him. What a stubborn guy that for 3 days he's being choked by seaweed. And then he goes, huh, maybe I ought to pray. And so he prayed and he said, I remembered the Lord and my prayer went up to you into your holy temple. Those who regard worthless idols forsake their own mercy, but I will sacrifice to you with the voice of thanksgiving. I'll pay what I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. So he goes, God, I'm not like those people who reject you. I'm still your guy. Okay, sorry. And so immediately God spoke to the fish and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. Amazing. Now, whales, I don't know if you've noticed, but they don't really go on dry land. They stay in the water. So we're talking major projectile vomiting. And he's flying through the air. He's laying there, probably no clothes. His skin's all pale, no hair. And, okay, now what? And then I love what God said to him. Now the word of the Lord, chapter 3, verse 1, came to Jonah the second time, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach to it the message that I tell you. So God tells him, yeah, my calling on you is still the same. I'm going to tell you what I told you before. Jonah's probably thinking, hopefully he's found somebody else to do it and I can find a better job. But God goes, no, I'm telling you the same thing I told you before. Get up, go to Nineveh, give them the message. And so Jonah finally got it. He arose and he went to Nineveh. according to the word of the Lord. It's smart when you finally start doing what God tells you to do. Nineveh was an exceedingly great city, a three-day journey in extent. In other words, 3 days around. And Jonah began to enter the city on the first day's walk. So you geometry students can kind of calculate how far a mile of some, or a day's journey of 3 days, probably getting close to the middle of the city after a day. I'm sure he was attracting a lot of attention. Had he gone dressed like a prophet, he just looked like another guy. But when you go in there with like no clothes and you're stark white, he probably put some kind of clothes on, but no hair. And it's like, what's this guy doing? So they gathered around as he went in there and he gave them his best sermon that he could. He began to enter the city on a first day's walk. And then he cried out. He just yelled this. Yet 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. It wasn't that great of a message, really. I mean, probably God had told them some other stuff too, but he got this. You're dead in 40 days. Enjoy it. I will. But the weird thing happens, the people actually responded. Look at the next verse. So the people of Nineveh believed God, proclaimed a fast, put on sackcloth from the greatest to the least of them. The king, in verse 6, heard about it. He took his robe off. He put himself with sackcloth and ashes, and he declared a fast for all the people. Hey, it's time to worship God and beg for his mercy. Now, most preachers, that would be their dream. Can you imagine? You preach a message, and the king and everyone else is like, oh, we want to worship God. And they had no guarantee, as far as we know from what he says here, that if they would repent, that God would spare them. I mean, they just repented anyway. It's like, hey, if we're just going down in flames in 40 days, we have been bad people, and maybe we ought to clean up our act a little bit just so we can leave some sort of good memory here on the earth. And everything we fought for is worth nothing if we're destroyed. Maybe they didn't even know for sure if God would destroy them, but something was touched in their heart, and they go, it is time. It's time for us to turn around. It's time for us to begin to live differently. And in verse 10 of chapter 3, then God saw their works, that they turned from their evil way, and God relented from the disaster that he had said he would bring upon them, and he did not do it. So it worked. They repented, and God forgave them and goes, you know the whole 40-day thing? Never mind. I changed my mind because look what you did. So now here's what I'm going to do. I'm not going to destroy you. Now, Nineveh ended up being destroyed anyway, but it was like 150 or so years later. At this point, God gave them another chance because of their hearts. Now, again, any self-respecting preacher is going to go, wow, this really worked. We're talking about, I mean, we thought it was cool on the day of Pentecost when Peter preached and 3,000 people got saved. We think it's cool when we have an evangelistic thing and like a few hundred people come forward. Imagine preaching a sermon and over a million people, or between 600,000 and 1.5 million people, all come forward, including the rulers, and go, we're going to be a Christian nation now. Not Christian, because Christ hadn't been born yet, but, you know, we're going to follow the God of Israel. A preacher would go, wow, this is a good day. Overall, as an evangelist, I think I'm doing pretty good. But look at Jonah, chapter 1, verse 4. But it displeased Jonah exceedingly, and he became angry. So he prayed to the Lord and said, oh, Lord, was not this what I said when I was still in my country? Therefore, I fled previously to Tarshish, for I know that you are a gracious and merciful God. I hate that about you. Slow to anger and abundant in loving kindness, one who relents from doing harm. You always change your mind and give people a break. Therefore now, O Lord, please take my life from me, for it is better for me to die than to live. And the Lord said, is it really right for you to be angry? And Jonah stomped off. So he's like, this is what I was thinking all along. You think I'm afraid to go to Vegas? I didn't want to go there because I know that if I preach the truth, maybe somebody's going to get saved. And I don't want those people in heaven with me. I don't want those people to get saved. God, you're such a softy. Wait, this is the God who, when you ran from him and didn't do what he said, he sent a fish to save you and gave you another opportunity. You're not ready to give another opportunity to these people. That's weird, but he's mad because he wanted God to destroy these people. And now, God, you're so easy. Man, these people deserve to die. Do you know what they've done to our people? Do you know what they're planning on doing? And so he was just mad. And God just asked him a simple question. So do you feel justified feeling the way you do? And he just goes, I'm not even talking to you. And so he leaves and he goes up the rest of chapter 4. He goes up on the top of a hill and he goes, they'll still, maybe I've persuaded God. When his favorite prophet is this hurt, maybe he will just go ahead and burn the city. And or maybe he'll kill some of them or, you know. And or maybe their repentance will be short-lived as soon as they hear that, hey, we made it past 40 days. They're going to go back to their old way of life, and then God will smoke them. And so he just decided to sit there and watch the devastation. He already said he wanted to die, so he had nothing to lose. So then, as you read on in chapter 4, God caused this plant to grow up with the big gourd, and it grew over him, and it gave him shade. So he's like, cool, I'm actually kind of comfortable while I'm waiting for the city to be destroyed. And he's sitting there just still, come on, come on. And then God sent a worm that ate this plant and it caused it to shrivel up and die. And then he's like, oh, man, what a bad thing to happen to me. Now I'm out in the sun again. Then God brought up a hot wind with just heat and misery, sand being kicked up, blowing over him. And then he's really mad. This stinks. I don't want to work for God. I don't want to live anymore. And then God asked him the same question that he had asked him before in verse 9. But this time he says, is it right for you to be angry about the plant? And he said, you better believe it's right for me to be angry even to death. It's killing me. I'm so mad. And yes, I should be mad about it. He's still like lippy with God. God's just trying to get him to think, is that really right? So then God said to him, look, you've had pity on the plant for which you didn't work at all. You didn't make it grow. Came up one night, perished in a night. Should I not pity Nineveh, that great city, in which are more than 120,000 persons who cannot discern between their right hand and their left, and much livestock? God said, you're mad at the city, and there are a lot of people in that city that have done some really bad things. I get that. But there's 120,000 little kids there, plus dyslexics, that don't know their right hand from their left. And he goes, not only that, if you don't care about people, what about animals? If I destroy the city, those animals are totally innocent. And you think I should just do that? So let me get this right. You care about a shade tree more than you care about a bunch of people who are innocent, little children who will die, animals that will be slaughtered, just so that you'll feel better about your anger? You want to die because you don't want them to be blessed?
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. Hey, we have new service times here at Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our service times on Sunday morning are now at 8 and 10. Directions and more information about the church can be found online at ccpacifichills.org. And you can watch our live stream there too, ccpacifichills.org. We hope to see you sometime soon. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Discovering balanced living through the Word of God, this has been The Balanced Word with Dave Roth. We'll have another great Bible story for you next time. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo, online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up my soul, wake up early in the day, wake up my hands, and the instrument I play.